Now, having done all this, having offered the mandala, having offered the universe in effect, in intention, in attitude, one might think there's nothing further to be done, nothing further to be offered, nothing in a way left to give. You've given everything, the whole universe. And this is certainly true so far as external offerings are concerned. But there's one thing left, one thing not offered. And what's that? You haven't offered the offerer. You've left him out. The one thing left is your own self, especially one's own body. And it's possible to give away the whole world, but that isn't enough. One must give oneself. Give oneself to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Give oneself to other living beings. Because even though one might have offered up in worship, even 100,000 times, the whole universe, one only really gives when one gives oneself. And it's this giving of oneself, this self-sacrifice, if you like, especially sacrifice of one's physical body, that is the subject matter of another tantric practice, another tantric exercise called Shird. I'll give a brief description, a very brief description of this practice, and then conclude. Chöd, which is a Tibetan word, means cutting. Cutting. And it corresponds to the Sanskrit chedana. It's the same word that we find in the title of the Vajra Chedika Sutra, which is one of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, the Diamond Cutter Sutra. The sutra, the discourse, the teaching of the wisdom, the transcendental wisdom that cuts, just like the diamond, but which cannot be cut. And Vajra Chedika is rendered into Tibetan as Dorje Chöpa, or Chö, the same word that we get here in this Chöd, cutting, practice. So what is cut? What is there a cutting of in this practice? There's a cutting of ego, cutting of self, in the more ordinary sense of the term, or rather, cutting of attachments to ego, cutting of attachment to self, especially attachments to the physical body, with which the self is much of the time identified. And this whole practice, this Chöd practice, the tradition of this practice, is a Nyingmapa tradition. Nyingmapa's being the school, if you like, the tradition founded by Padmasambhava. The whole practice is rather elaborate. I've only time this evening to describe the central part of the practice. So what happens? The tantric yogin leaves the town, leaves even the villages, leaves his friends and companions, and he goes miles and miles away to a wild and solitary place, preferably to a haunted place, preferably, of course, to the cremation ground, which is where we found ourselves last week. And he goes, of course, completely alone. And he takes with him various articles which he will need in the course of the ritual part of the practice. He takes with him the skin of a beast of prey, complete with claws. Takes a miniature tent. Takes a staff surmounted by a trident. Takes a trumpet made of a human thigh bone. Takes a small hand drum and a few other items. And having settled himself in that wild and solitary spot, in that cremation ground perhaps, with the corpses round about, with the jackals, perhaps even with a sense of non-human beings around as well, he starts upon various preliminaries to the practice. I'm not going to describe the preliminaries. And he offers up, after that, a prayer to the Guru, a prayer in this case to the great Tantric Guru, Padmasambhava. And he then turns his attention to his own physical body. He may look perhaps at bodies lying around, corpses lying around in various stages of decomposition. But he looks at his own body and he imagines that he's dead, that his own body is a corpse. And the text says he imagines that his own body is a fat, luscious looking corpse. And practicing there, sitting there or lying there, he has actually to feel that he's dead, that the body is a corpse. It's a dead body which is lying there or sitting there. And he then feels his mind, his true mind, as separate from the body. In fact, he visualizes, he sees his own true mind. He visualizes his mind, his own true mind, as the knowledge Dakini, or awareness Dakini. And like the Dakini that we saw last week, she is red in color, pure red. And she has three eyes, the third eye being the eye of wisdom. And she has a wrathful expression. And except for a few ornaments of bone, she's completely naked. And she holds in one hand a kind of chopper, and in the other a skull cup. And she stands apart from the body, apart from the corpse. She is separate. The physical body, the dead body, the corpse is there. One's own true mind, in the form of the knowledge or awareness Dakini, is there, separate, independent. And then, this Dakini figure, this terrible red Dakini figure, proceeds to do something. You see her doing it. She does something with her chopper. She chops off the head of the corpse, your own dead body. She chops it off. And once she's chopped it off, that severed head slowly turns into a skull. And the Dakini then places the skull, after turning it upside down, on top of three smaller skulls. In other words, she's made a sort of cauldron standing on three legs, the three smaller skulls being the legs and the big skull, the original skull, which was the head of the corpse, your dead body, as the cauldron. And then, with her chopper, she cuts up the whole corpse into bits, and she throws these bits into the skull cauldron as an offering to the deities. And then there are pronounced, the yogin pronounces certain mantras, and as these mantras are pronounced, the offerings, the bits and pieces of flesh and blood and bone in the skull cauldron, are all transformed into amrita, all transformed into nectar, the nectar of immortality. And the yogin then proceeds to invite the three jewels, the guardian deities and spirits of various kinds, to come and partake of the feast of nectar, the feast of ambrosia. And as he invites them, he tells them that he is sacrificing his own physical body. Because it's the physical body, he says, which is the root of duality. which makes you distinguish between subject and object. So the yogin, in a very happy and triumphant and glad mood, in a heroic mood, if you like, invites all these beings, all these spiritual beings, high and low, to come and enjoy the ambrosia, the nectar, in whatsoever form they please. Peaceful or wrathful, peaceful or terrifying, as they please. And all this, the tantric yogin actually experiences. It's not just an idea, not just words, not something you just listen to in a well-lighted room. It's something that you do, something that you go through, visualize, experience, as the tantric yogin does, away from humanity, on your own, in some solitary spot, in a cremation ground, where you conjure up all this terrifying imagery to get rid of your attachment to your own physical body. And there are some tantric yogins who wander all the time from place to place. And whenever they find a wild and solitary spot, especially when they find a cremation ground, they halt there for a few days and they perform this chared practice, this practice of cutting the ego. And gradually an effect is produced. Gradually they start feeling as though the body is dead. It's a corpse already. And attachment to the body starts diminishing. They see, they realize that only the true mind exists, whether in its red darkeny form or not. Only the true mind exists, pure and radiant and distinct from the body. Now, not many people, especially not many people nowadays, will be prepared to go as far as these tantric yogis, these tantric yogis of the Nyingmapa tradition. Not many people really want to sacrifice themselves in any sense. Not many people even will be found prepared to practice the offering of the mandala. But even so, it's important that we should understand or try to understand the principle involved. Important above all that we should try to understand the place of giving in the spiritual life. Giving to the Buddha, giving to other living beings. Important that we should try to appreciate at least the symbolism of offerings and self-sacrifice.